sing a woman says she does a retweet. Well, this one dedicated to all of my tweeters. Well, everything a woman says she does a retweet me. Sean Paul and Sean Kingston got the girls them caught. She wanna retweet me. Every little thing a woman tweet, she a retweet me. Yo. But this one dedicated to all my tweeters. So every time the day they just a twisting to my tongue.
Girl, you the baddest. See me on my Twitter page. All lies baddest. No gonna follow me. I'm a fanatic. Looking at your body, babe. You need to tell your man it's good. Cause I know what to do with you. I know what to, I know what to, I know what to do with you. I know what to, I know what to, I know what to do with you. I know what to, I know what to, I know what to do with you. So just
hit me on Twitter and I'ma get with you. Your man steady hating, but he'll get the picture.
Support for WPBB comes from the Madu Conservancy. Writer, artist, gardener Robert Dash's public garden in Sagaponack. Named one of the 100 most beautiful gardens in the world by the Chicago Botanical Garden. Madu is a treasure in our midst. Information about the exterior decorator, outdoor furniture designer, and historian John Danzer's Sunday, March 9th lecture at the Madu Conservancy is available online at madu.org. Hey, good morning, and thank you so much, Madu, for being a sponsor of the Media Mavens. We are joining you back with you live on this Friday, and we repeat on Saturday in case you're going to be listening to us on Saturday morning. But we welcome you, and thanks for listening. I'm Bonnie Grice, and with me, Kyle Lynch at the helm. He's our navigator, of course, every week. And we've got the full crew here this morning. Wow. What a studio full.
This we fit. Awesome. I don't think we've ever had
yes,
this,
we have.
Oh, yes,
yes,
we have.
Not that many times, though.
Not many. But here you are, Annette Hinkle.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Hello.
No longer from the Sag Harbor Express.
No, I kind of am, you know.
She'll always be with the Sag Harbor
Express. I was in there twice this week just hanging out.
Just hanging, right?
Yeah. Like, you know.
And sporting your Maven's pink streak.
Yeah,
I love it.
I just,
thank you.
I don't know what I am right now.
So. Uh-oh. Well, we'll get into that. Don Watson from, well, formerly the Southampton Press.
As if
we're
going to
get, what are we going to do? We're going to do a little shuffle here with the Mavens. Oh, my God. So, Don, good morning to you.
Good morning, Bonnie.
And I've been, you know, posting all over Facebook that you're going to drop the big news about what it is you're doing. Everybody's wondering, what are you doing now?
I think we should hold off until a little later in the hour.
Okay, we'll keep the suspense holding.
Yeah, keep it on the dial.
It's kind of like ticket giveaways. Wait till the end of the hour. Just wait.
After all the suspense, it better be good.
Yeah, right, right.
I'm going to disappoint everyone. I'm sorry.
That is
except
Brendan,
for myself.
That's Brendan J. O'Reilly, who is editor of DansHamptons.com. And
well,
good
actually, it's DansPapers.com.
Thank you, DansPapers.com.
It used to be DansHamptons.com.
That's right, right. When did it switch over?
Over the summer.
Okay.
Yeah, we like to keep the identity one and the same, DansPapers, DansPapers.com.
DansPapers for 50-plus years, right? DansPapers. And DansPapers.com, he's editor there. And, of course, the one and only Georgie, Catherine Manu, plus one. Catherine, who is managing editor of the Sag Harbor Express.
Actually, I'm now the editor and co-publisher of the Sag
Harbor
Express.
Oh, my God, I can't keep up. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, when did that happen?
I guess it was kind of official, like January 1st.
Yeah, I think it was first issue of January.
With the new year.
Yeah, the new year.
Have you been seeing 11/11 too?
I haven't been seeing 11/11, but I noticed on Facebook, it was about a week ago, that it's still following you.
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
Really? Oh, yeah. And now people, Brendan, we talked about this last week. Brendan thinks it's now just you have it in your head. And you're looking for it.
It's just like when you're pregnant, you see all pregnant women.
It's true. That's and true. Like and baby things.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Right.
I wouldn't know about that. Brendan probably wouldn't know about that.
Right. So you don't notice.
Yeah.
Probably.
Right. But no, I mean, 11/11, it's seriously, I saw it again last night. I mean, it happened. It's there.
Yeah.
And then I'm starting to see 1/11. I saw 1/11 yesterday. It's a phenomenon.
Have you played the lotto?
That was just what I was
asking. Right?
You should.
It's either that or I have to design my pine box. I mean, I got to do one or the other, you know? It's because it was starting to freak me out a little bit, 11/11. Mm-hmm. But I'm told that it's a power thing, that it's synchronicity, a synergy, something new and big is going to happen. And it's a new year, so who knows, right?
Well, it's contagious. We've all had
big
things happen.
Big things.
So, yeah, so let's
talk about life changes.
Yeah,
oh, my God. Let's start with you, Brendan. Because we've all, you know, expressed our life changes. What about you? Have you gone through any transformation lately?
Well, I think we discussed a week or two ago that I did get engaged over the holidays.
Yes,
I've been ramping
of course.
Up towards that.
Thank you.
Monday, we met with Father Jerry at Mary Immaculate in Bellport, where we'd like to have the ceremony.
Oh, Father Jerry.
Do you have a date set yet?
Right now, we're looking at April 2015. We have 1 week in mind, but we have to make sure the date's going to be available for both the church and the reception venue, so there's a lot to juggle.
Why would you do April?
And you're lovely intended.
We didn't want to do anything in the winter, and then the summer and the fall, the prices inflate, and we're trying to be conservative about it and not be exorbitant.
We actually got married in April, and my husband and I, and it was for the same reason, and it was such a good choice because we did the end of April, so we had a beautiful day. It was so much more affordable because you get into the summer and it's in the fall and it's completely cost prohibitive to get married out here.
So why Bellport? Is that where she's from?
I grew up in East Patchogue, so Mary Immaculate in Bellport was my church.
Your church, okay.
Can you please say your intended's name? We love
her. My intended,
yes.
Allison Borkwin.
Okay. Allison. Yeah. We should play some Elvis Costello, right? Yeah. Oh, my God. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, how long have you been together?
Since July of 2010.
Oh, okay. So you've been together long enough to know this is it. And I got engaged in October, as the world knows. It took a while for me to answer. It took like 24 hours at least. And the first thing I said
that must have been an uncomfortable night.
You were in Ireland, right?
Yeah, I was in Ireland. And actually, Steve afterward said he was nervous asking, because he wasn't sure how I was going to respond. And the first thing I said was, excuse me, I have to go use the restroom.
Wow. That's quite romantic.
Never fight
words, right? But it took me a while. I mean, the first question is, why marriage? Da, da, da. Yeah. How was it? What did Allison say? Set the picture for us.
Well, I told her after we spent a night out with some friends that I wanted to go down to the beach, which we had done before. So it wasn't like a big thing, like, oh, we're just going to go down to the beach before we go home for like 5 minutes. But then it was a cold night because it was right after Christmas. So we got out of the car. I got out of the car. She didn't want to get out of the car. But after me being out of the car for long enough, she's like, okay, I guess I'm getting out of the car. and then I just I kind of prompted her with a few different questions and then building up to the question I was going to ask. And I think she wasn't too surprised because she knew like it was about that time where we were going to get engaged soon, I think. But she was surprised that it happened just then. Which is good, because I thought I kind of gave it away. Like, because at Christmas, I had to ask her dad, which meant I had to pull him out of the room. And I thought everybody knew what we were doing, and apparently nobody caught on.
Whoa. So, you went through the whole process of asking her father.
Well, that was also a funny story. Well, when I asked him, I said, oh, you know, I'd like to ask permission to ask Allison to marry me. And he says, well, you have to get her permission. And I'm like, well, yeah, but I'm not going to get her permission unless I have your permission first.
That's awesome.
We're tearing up over here.
I don't think too many boys do that anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, guys don't do that much anymore, do they? Wow. Why was that important to you?
I think for me personally, it felt like the right thing to do. No reason for me to buck tradition. And I would say that Allison probably values it more than I do, and she has a lot of respect for her parents, and I think her mother's listening too. When I told Allison's dad, like, if I don't have your permission, I'm not going to get Allison's permission. Like, she obviously expected me to go through her dad first.
Wow. And he was super excited. I mean, you guys get along, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. How about mother-in-law? To be. You guys are cool. I mean,
well, I just told you she's listening, so yeah. I better say awesome.
Well, that could mean one thing or another. It doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, I mean, okay, great. So
you think he's going to be honest now?
Yeah.
she's a wonderful girl, so I'm sure her parents are also wonderful.
Listen, that usually still happens.
I'm one of the best interviewers, so I can get anything out of anybody.
That's
I'm
good.
Waiting
you
for
go,
him to be honest.
You go, girl.
You go, girl. Yeah.
No, both of her parents are great.
That's great.
They've been living in Manorville for a long time, and it's very nice to be part of their family now.
And are you going to be in on all the planning as a guy, or you step back? Are you following tradition that way, where you say you guys take care of it?
I went on all the site visits with Allison to check out the venues, and we both had our opinions about them.
Did you think of Ohika Castle, and have you heard about the guy who was shot?
Yeah.
The owner of Ohika?
In the face. He was shot in
the face.
And he's fine now. I mean, he's okay,
right.
He was talking that day.
unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But that's a big place, right, for weddings and all kinds of
things. Well, too big for our budget, but like we knew it was there. It's also the place where they shoot Royal Pains.
Oh, right.
That's a stand-in for the Hamptons and where Hank and his brother have their apartment within Ohika Castle, which they don't call Ohika. They just call it a mansion in the Hamptons. But I guess what happened is he got shot in the face, but the bullet didn't penetrate his skull. So whoever this like would-be assassin is wasn't very good at it.
Yeah, I think he get shot in the eye, though. I mean, it was like, you're shot in the face, that's pretty dramatic anyway. But I think he was shot in the
eye.
But yeah, he was that day. And,
and
so
what's
he's
the
recovering.
Story?
He's home
they were,
now.
I don't even know the story behind it. What
they,
prompted
they
it?
They don't know who did it yet. They don't know why. Or maybe he personally has a better idea than what we've been reading about in the papers.
Maybe it was somebody who couldn't get into Ohika or book it because it was too expensive. I don't know. Yeah, yeah. I've never
weddings
been to
Ohika. Weddings do make people crazy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Weddings
yeah, they do. Absolutely. There's a whole bunch of TV shows about that.
A whole bunch of TV shows about everything.
Yeah. I can't imagine, though, if I was affianced to someone who's on one of those television shows, wanting to still marry them. They behave so badly.
I can't imagine going on a TV show, a reality show.
Maybe the shows don't. Maybe they don't air until after the wedding.
I think the only one that really, really fascinates me, have you ever seen Naked and Afraid?
No.
Isn't it that bear guy, Bear Grylls or whatever?
No,
it's different.
It's couples, real couples, who go into the jungle, around different jungles around the world, and they are filmed naked. They are sent into the jungle, and they have to fend for themselves as if they were cave people. So it's men and women naked, and they blur out the body parts, but they're wandering around naked, and they have to survive, like, I think a week or 2 weeks in the total jungle.
So do they know each other before all
nope.
this starts?
Nope.
Oh, that does not sound
it's
like fun.
Men and women who have to go out together naked and afraid.
Are they allowed to make clothing?
Yes.
Does that violate the rules?
Actually, I think they're allowed. That's an interesting question because they've always been blurred. So I guess not. I guess they're not allowed to do that.
It seems like if you're in the jungle naked, that all rules are off and you can do whatever.
Well,
you
the
want.
Idea is naked and afraid, you know, and it's always a man and a woman together, so they have to couple up male and female, and it's bizarre. And
well,
it's
they
on,
don't have to couple
yeah,
up male
on?
And female. It's they a, could couple up
no,
same sex couples.
No, I think the requirement is it's
but they're not couples.
Men and women. It's not it, not that they're coupled. They're not. They don't know each other.
They don't
but
know
I'm
each
saying
other.
That they team up.
Right.
A man and a woman.
Right.
And they have to survive.
Sort of like the Adam and Eve thing.
They eat, exactly. It's on the Discovery Channel.
Hmm.
Yeah. So it's not like it's some bizarre like Playboy Channel or something. And it has
God, that would be a different
it has
show.
Nothing, it has nothing to do with the nakedness, and yet it does. Right. Because it just strips you down bare.
Well, it's about the hierarchy of needs. You have to take care
exactly.
of your food and shelter before you can even think about procreation.
Yep, yep.
So and that's the last thing on their mind at that point when they're starving and cold.
Oh, my God. I mean, but who, whatever. Who
weird.
Knows?
But
yeah.
who signs up for it? You
yeah.
know?
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's what I
maybe people between
out.
Jobs like Dawn and I.
Yeah, I will not be on Naked and Afraid. That is not
Especially
my
not
next job.
Not in the Hamptons in the winter. Can you imagine? Naked and Afraid in the Hamptons
it's
in the middle
winter.
Of
oh,
the
Lord.
Polar vortex.
Actually, I'd kind of like to think of the Mavens as Naked and Afraid. It's you know, I mean, sometimes it can be like that. Does
We're
it
naked
feel like
and
that?
Fearless.
Yeah, naked yeah. and fearless. And we are edgy public radio. By the way, speaking of that, I was talking to Nancy Atlas, who is going to work up something for us as a possible theme for the Mavens. Really excited. Ooh. And I was talking to her yesterday. She said, okay, what do you want? What are you thinking? And I was thinking, you know, this is edgy. We like to be edgy. It's a different approach to public radio. It's informative, but it's entertaining and fun. And I said, we got to rock out, too. So she's working on that.
Excellent.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see what happens. And in the meantime, we are informative, and there's lots going on. We might as well, since we have two people who are still on who are not on the dole. I'm just kidding. writing and reporting regularly. Georgie, let's throw it to you first off, because this is the big headline, a big headline for us locally. And it may have repercussions beyond regionally and even nationally. But this is the heroin ring that was busted. Talked with Anna Thronholz yesterday about this. And this is Suffolk County Right.
Well, the East End Drug Task Force, which is, you know, Suffolk County, is, you know, but combines with local municipalities as well. Suffolk County District Attorney Thomas Spoda announced last Wednesday that they had busted a heroin ring that was based out of Riverhead and East Harlem, I believe. So nine men were arrested, six from Riverhead, three from East Harlem. And primarily they were charged with criminal possession, criminal sale of heroin. Two men actually in the case, and it's important to note this, were not charged with criminal sale. So, we don't want to refer to them as a collective group necessarily, as alleged.
You've got to be careful of language, right?
Yeah, yes. I mean, this is all still alleged, but, you know, they've been arrested. All of the men were arrested between October and February of this year. And, what we found talking to the district attorney's office and speaking with some other groups is, you know, this kind of shines a light on a larger issue, certainly regionally and absolutely nationally, which is heroin and opiate abuse in general, which is apparently, you know, pretty significantly on the rise.
You know, it used to be, I was talking with Anna yesterday about this, and years back when I was coming up, heroin was like the big H. Like, that was something you never went toward unless you were like a rock star or something. You could never get a hold of it, for mm-hmm. one thing. But now it's like, it's becoming a household word almost.
Well, it's, you know, there's a couple of factors. First off, it's really affordable. And in this case, actually, they talked about the specific heroin that was involved was called Hollywood heroin. It had like this red stamp on it that said Hollywood, and its potency, it was very potent heroin, and so you could get a higher street value for it, like $15-$20, as opposed to, you know, $8, $10 for a little bag. But heroin in general is a fairly cheap drug to buy on the street, and it's apparently pretty easy to buy as well. There's also,
but easy out here, you wouldn't think of the East End as a high crime area.
Well, I guess one thing that I kept hearing over and over from different experts in healthcare that deal with drug abuse is that everybody thinks that it's not here and this isn't a high drug or crime area and it's not really a suburban thing. It's absolutely a suburban thing. It's, you know, across all economic levels, across all, races, genders. I mean, everybody has their hands in this kind of abuse.
And,
it's not to one specific group of people.
But then you do think about the people who come here for the summer, are they also targeting the high rollers, if you will?
Well, I mean, in this case, that's not to say that heroin is not being sold in streets on the East End. But in this case, the sales were happening in Riverhead and parking lots, around Walmart and at the Tanger Outlet Center.
So that's where you get it. Oh, okay. That's
I know. This was stressed over and over again. There's no demographic that heroin abuse is specific to. And, you know, what they've seen a lot is that people become addicted to, an opiate, like a prescription pill that has an opiate base to it, like Vicodin, Percocet.
Those are equivalents of heroin, in a sense?
Well, they're all opiates.
Yeah. The gateway drugs, right.
Right now we see that it's doctors are, being very responsible and making sure that, they are limiting people's access to these kinds of drugs. And, if you have a prescription pill addiction, some people are finding that it's easier to go and find heroin, and it's also more affordable.
Wait, so they're replacing the Vicodin, the painkillers or whatever, with heroin.
That's not everybody, but that is a trend that has been seen.
Because it's cheaper.
It's probably easier to get,
too. Are they going to start wanting to make heroin legal, like marijuana?
I don't think so.
That's methadone.
That's methadone. Yeah. Right. Okay.
So what about, Georgia, I was just curious, did they say anything about a rise in the use of, among like high school students on the East End as far as heroin and that sort of thing?
Well, one thing that is difficult when looking into stories stories like this. And we're actually doing a three-part series at The Express. We started focusing this week on this specific drug bust. We're going to look at the judicial system in terms of heroin abuse next week, and then also treatment options and obstacles, because there's a lot of obstacles to treatment for drug abuse, which is kind of interesting. But statistics are really hard to come by in terms of how many people are using, and everybody will tell you there's not great stats. I mean, we had some stuff that we got from the district attorney's office. You know, they compiled a report that came out in 2012 that looked at heroin abuse, and they showed that there was a 425% increase in the number of participants in the Suffolk County Drug Court Program that had heroin and opiate abuse in their lives. So they're able to track it that way, but not like, oh, we're seeing an increase of this specific demographic.
And I wonder, when the headline reads, heroin ring is busted, how does one know when something is busted, when a ring like that is actually busted? I assume means taken care of fully. How do they know?
Well, in this case, what we know is that the East End Drug Task Force, over an incredibly long period of time, and they deserve a lot of credit, these guys. I mean, you're talking about, this was, you know, a case that involved undercover officers and, you know, many months and years of gathering, you know, data and evidence, you know, in an extremely dangerous situation. But three men who are alleged to have provided heroin to what they referred to as the Riverhead Crew, which was six men, you know, those nine people were busted. And so they believe that this Hollywood heroin ring, you know,
has been taken care of.
But that being said, you know, while that might cause a slight shift in the availability, that doesn't mean that it's not still a major problem.
How many
that
years?
Law enforcement and healthcare is going to have to contend with.
How long has this been worked on? Did they say?
This specific case, I mean, I know the arrests happened between October and February, but they started noticing Hollywood heroin, I believe, in 2011.
How do you notice
was
it?
Because they're finding, like, it's stamped. The bags are stamped. There was also some overdose cases that involved this specific drug, although none of them were fatal, you know, that we're aware of. Mm. So they've been tracking this specific kind of heroin.
And this East End Drug Task Force has been in existence now. Do we know how long? Has it been almost 10 years or not that long?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head how long it's been in existence. But, you know, for some time now, and, you know, it involves not just the Suffolk County District Attorney's Office, Suffolk County Police, Suffolk County Sheriffs, but also Southampton Town Police, Southampton Village Police, East Hampton Village Police, East Hampton Town Police, Southold Police. So, you know, we're very fortunate that we have this collective working together on issues like this.
And you've probably talked and covered this throughout your career, right, Brendan, in writing in general?
Yeah, the East End Drug Task Force, bringing together the different police departments that we have in the East End, because there's just so many. Each town has one, then we have village departments. And for each of them individually to try to tackle a problem like this that has so much geography is very difficult. And also it has the benefit of, say, in Southampton Village, you can't really go undercover in Southampton Village. Everybody
Absolutely.
Knows you. But if you have the drug task force, now you take that Southampton Village cop as an example and send him to Orient to go undercover there. Send somebody from Southold to go undercover in East Hampton and vice versa. And that way they can do drug buys without getting recognized.
Interesting. I hadn't even thought about that. But yeah, these are small towns, small
communities. Everybody knows everybody.
Right. So, yeah. Now, what about jurisdiction, too? Because you said it also branched into East Harlem. I mean, what did they work with? Manhattan police then, Harlem police?
I'm sure they were working in cooperation.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's the point of the drug task force, too, is to be able to reach out regionally, right? They have that
sway. Well, to be able to work regionally, but I think what Brendan was just discussing is a really good point. You know, I mean, otherwise, how are you going to be able to get into, you know, where you're building these relationships with these alleged dealers, you know, if we all know each other on the street, you know?
Right, right. I still am. It boggles my mind, heroin as being, you know, the big recreational drug now.
Well, it seems like, I'm sure a lot of drugs are big recreational drugs right now, number one. But, you know, I had the same reaction. You know, there's no good drugs. But, you know, it's like heroin, crystal meth, crack cocaine. I mean, these were just drugs that are on this, like, you know, skull and crossbones list.
I also wonder if they've gotten cheaper since our day, you know, like.
Definitely.
I mean, not that you couldn't get them. I mean, I remember there were parks when I was growing up in Dayton where they were known as heroin parks. But but the people that did
Dayton,
them,
that's
yeah,
Dayton.
It was bad.
Big
drug
scene.
Thing was, it was like, but it was like, again, you said it was so weird and so foreign and so creepy. You know,
heroin
I don't
was
know.
The big, it was
but
horse,
that don't,
right?
Remember?
It was the big
and did
thing.
It, wasn't there a time when they were talking about like a lot of supermodels doing heroin to stay thin? So
exactly.
I think, unfortunately, I think things like that end up making it more of a chic kind of use.
Well,
and I think that's what's happened since the, you know, the 70s and
80s. And probably that's why the Hamptons can be targeted because we are, you know, the chicest of the chic, supposedly. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's the summer crowd.
Well, the cost is a really big factor mm-hmm. here. You know, I mean, if you look at, like, what it would cost, you know, to buy a potent kind of marijuana as opposed to, a bag of heroin and how long, you know, that would... I don't want to say how long an abuser would use that amount of substance. I mean, it's so much cheaper. And people are also snorting heroin.
Yeah, we were just saying that because usually when we thought of heroin, it was always the needle and the damage done, mm-hmm. a Neil Young song, mm-hmm. right? And yet-
and the needle isn't really the way that, you know, everybody's using this drug anymore. People are snorting it. And because of the potency, you know, that's become a way to use this drug. And so you're not having to necessarily cross that line, which is a lot of drug abusers view that as an injection, as crossing a line that
because
they're not ready to,
The other problem is it sounds like, remember, read about the two guys that died on the ship out in the Seychelles over the weekend. They were two ex-Navy SEALs who were guarding the Maersk, the ship that had been the focus of that
Captain Phillips?
Yeah, of Captain Phillips. So it's off the coast of Seychelles, and they're just there to sort of guard the crew. They go out one night, and I guess last Saturday they come home. Both of them were found dead in their rooms over the weekend on the ship, and they think it was heroin. And then that it's huge over there. They said like it's like got one of the largest drug populations is the Seychelles Islands, which again is like, you know,
it's like paradise.
It's like
right?
paradise, the way where you go to party and all that. But a lot of heroin now too is being cut like by rat poison and stuff like that.
Oh, well, they always had been.
Yeah,
I thought.
But I guess that it's gotten really bad because it's so popular. They said 2% of the apparently the population in the Seychelles that where these guys were is doing heroin.
Good Lord.
So it's become a worldwide issue.
Well, look
issue.
At Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah,
I mean, God
right.
bless, you know. And my thought about, because there's so much, you know, discussion about that. I will bet you it was not an intended suicide on his part.
Oh,
I'll
sure.
bet he
I'm
just sure was taking it and loving the high and just happened to overdose to take too
yep.
much.
Well, he had had he's been reported, you know, in interviews saying that he had addiction issues in
right.
his life and, you know, had relapsed after using prescription drugs for an injury. You know, and so, that's what happened there.
And does this lead us to the whole prescription drug discussion then?
Well, I think that's something that you can't discount the impact that, you know, prescription drugs are having. I mean, prescription drug abuse is really serious issue in this country.
Is it oxycodone or Oxycontin? Aren't those the a couple of the big ones, too? These are
painkillers,
right? Oxycontin,
Vicodin, Percocet. I mean, these are all, again, opiate-based painkillers.
Which was once called hillbilly heroin.
Mm.
So
that's because it did
yeah.
start as
but
more
now,
of a rural
again,
drug.
That's more expensive mm-hmm.
than
getting heroin.
And it's also like, you know, and I think they're trying to tighten the controls on those kind of things, too. So a lot of people are probably turning to heroin because it's gotten really hard to even get fake prescriptions for Oxy and all that stuff, I believe.
Ooh.
Absolutely. They've gotten much more strict about doctors, about who they're giving prescriptions to. You know, people used to, you could shop around your doctors.
Oh, now you're on a list, a national list, I
you're
hear.
You're on a
and
list.
Yep.
God, go try buying cough medicine.
Yeah. No kidding. Well, and
Sudafed.
Pharmacists, and this is another thing, pharmacists, you know, have come, you know, are really making sure that people have the appropriate prescriptions and they're questioning. So, you know, we've got these different barriers in place. But it's actually interesting, the New York Times, that we're discussing this today, I woke up this morning, I hadn't had a chance to read this article in depth, but they have a piece on the cover of their paper this morning about a town in Rutland, Vermont, that's contending with significant heroin abuse problems.
In Vermont.
So, you know, again, you know, to be clear, you know, this is drug abuse that's happening in every community. And if you think it's not happening in your community, it is. You know?
And you're doing, in the Sag Harbor Express, you're doing a series now on this, right?
Well, as we started looking into just covering, you know, a crime story, you know, with this bust, you know, we were talking to different healthcare providers and people in the judicial system, and it just started to become so big for one story. So we thought it would be good to break it up. I think there's been a lot of interest because, you know, people are talking about, you know, that this is a national problem. So, like, we'll have a story next week and then a third installment 2 weeks from now.
How do you all feel about the legalization of marijuana? That got a big response.
You know, I haven't been someone who's experimented with drugs myself, so I can't really say from personal experience whether marijuana is safe or not. But now there's so many voices out there saying that it's no different than alcohol, or it could be safer than alcohol because alcohol might be more addictive than marijuana. But I could say, like, from high school, I grew up with kids who normal, started smoking pot, became not just like... I don't know the best way to describe it, but they came kind of burnouts,
slackers.
Lost all focus in school, kids who may have had little pre-existing exposure towards depression have now really exacerbated it by introducing drug use to it. So I do have a lot of concerns that marijuana is more risky than people like to think it is. But at the same rate, I've also met people who keep up their jobs, do really well, and you find out that they smoke sometimes, and if that person was to get arrested and lose their job or have to go to jail or lose their license, it's like, well, this person's actually very responsible, and I know other people who might abuse alcohol and still keep a job, and even if they're found out to abuse alcohol, would still keep their job because alcohol is legal, so why are we punishing somebody using something else?
Yeah, looking at all sides. I wonder, this brings up a very interesting topic. I mean, yes, drugs are addictive, but what if you don't have an addictive personality?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if I agree that pot is addictive.
Well, that's what I was saying, that alcohol is addictive, but pot is not.
I'm not even sure alcohol is either.
Is it the drug or is it the personality?
I think it's the personality, personally.
That's yes. Yeah, I think that
but,
as
well.
But,
you know, I mean, as somebody in the judicial system said to me this week, she was like, if I tried crack cocaine, I would be a crack cocaine addict if I tried it once, you know?
Because of who she is, or because of the drug?
No, because of the drug.
The drug, exactly. That's the difference. No, that's what I was thinking.
So there are, you know what?
And the heroin's the same way. I think it's very much once you've done it, it's like you're on it.
I wonder about that. I wonder if it's not the personality.
I think it depends on the drug.
Yeah, well. And the potency of it, I guess.
Well, what you're saying there about whether it's different from person to person, I think that's one of the issues that we have with drug abuse. Like, knowing everything we know about heroin, why does anyone try it? It's because everybody thinks they know better. It's like, well, I'm not going to be like that guy because I know better. It's like, no, you don't. Yeah. Philip Seymour Hoffman knew better, and now he's dead. You know, everybody thinks they know better.
No, but he knew he had addiction issues. And it wasn't just necessarily to heroin. It was, I think he had an addictive personality.
Like he had
and
been I think, addicted to alcohol as
yeah,
well, probably.
And he, yeah, and he might have been addicted to then food. You know, I mean, if you can't, you know, serve the addiction with one thing, you serve it with another. Or sex addicts. Mm-hmm. I mean, the addictive personalities. They're going to get something that they're going to be addicted to, no matter what. And yet, maybe there are people who can experiment with drugs and not become addicted to them, but experiment with them. Do you think that's a possibility?
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't advise anybody.
Yeah, and that's not advising.
No, I know, but certainly I wouldn't advise anybody to experiment. But I think there is something to what Brendan's saying. You know, you always think that you're the exception. You always think your family is the exception, your school's the exception, you know, your community is the exception. And then, you know, you pretty much generally find out that you're not. So, I mean, 9 times out of 10.
Right, right.
So,
meanwhile, Colorado is going to make a lot of money in tax money.
$100 million.
So,
$100 million.
I also wonder, too, if there's a way that is this possibly going to affect the drug wars down on the borders with Mexico. You know, is that going to change and maybe render some of that activity useless and kind of calm things down? As far as like,
I wonder if we've seen any reports on that.
I don't know.
Right?
I haven't read anything.
Is that
on
something
that
the Sag Harbor Express would go after? something that Annette and Don might write about?
Your foreign correspondents, you know, send me down to.
If I could, I would.
Here's something I think would be interesting: is to see how. I mean, Colorado has always kind of been known as like a stoner state, but to see how this legalization of marijuana affects cultural values, kind of like how casual Fridays have now slipped into I'm going to wear jammies to work. Let's see if 20 years from now it's just absolutely okay to not be productive.
Right.
And to just be chill all the time, man.
Be chill, man.
Yeah. So that'd be an interesting kind of, for me, like the social aspect.
Yeah,
and
everybody's
going to
be driving like 35 on the highways out there.
Well, maybe Prius sales will go up.
Right.
Then maybe we wouldn't encounter deer so badly.
Right.
Prius see, I'm interested in the cultural.
That's interesting.
Have you worn jammies to work?
Well, look, I'm wearing dungarees today.
I love that word.
As someone who seldom wears jeans might say.
I think I know a Girl Scout song that has that word in it.
So what was your last story, Dawn Watson, for the Southampton Press?
Actually,
what was it?
The very last thing I wrote was my Sag Harbor Spyglass column last week, which was my goodbye column. But the very last thing that I wrote this week was just the short photo kicker with Nancy Atlas's very last Bay Street
Fireside session.
So that's the very last thing I actually wrote for the paper total. But it's just a little tiny
short.
How
did it feel?
I got to tell you, I love working at the press. It's been 7 years of my life. I've built many lifetime relationships there in the building and outside of the building. The thing that's been so amazing about this last few weeks after I've made that announcement is that people all over have been contacting me, coming up to me, inviting me out to lunch and dinner. So I got to worry about being addicted to French fries. Mm. But it's just, the outpouring of support and jobs has been crazy town. I'm so thrilled.
So everybody's wondering, what are you doing?
Well, the reason I decided to leave is I had a great opportunity for a full-time photography gig. Which has opened up my world with flexibility and freedom and financially. So that's terrific. With that, many people have been coming to me offering me freelance magazine work. So I've been doing, I actually just this week, after my last day was Tuesday, Wednesday and yesterday, I've put together 3 features and I've got 5 press releases. I took 200 photos last night. Like, It's wild. I'm
Where
thrilled.
Will we be able to see your byline, though?
Well, as soon as my byline is out, I will shout that to the rooftops. But I want to wait until the pieces are published.
And will they all be locally? You'll stay local, or
some of them
go
will
global.
Be local.
Okay.
Some of them are really great local glossy shelter magazines. In still the realms that I've always worked in. So within
arts,
culture, real estate, interior design, that kind of stuff. So that's where the asks have been coming from and where I've been focusing.
And will you always be Dawn Watson? Dawn Watson the Hamptons? That's your...
Well, I'm Dawn Watson the Hamptons on Facebook. I'm also, and this is the other great thing, so I'm Hamptons Party Girl, which I will now start monetizing the blog. It's doing well. Media Mavens we've got going on. And the book, I'm now actively looking for an agent. So, and this is so great. My photography work is I'm able to focus a little bit more time. I'm dropping off pieces today to Hampton Photo Arts for their big show at Ashwaug Hall this weekend.
Yeah, that's coming
so
up.
So I'm able to live a creative life with flexibility, and I can take vacation now.
Yay! And speaking of which, Annette, you just got back.
Yeah, I just got back.
How's it feel being free?
It's interesting. It's different. I'm still kind of trying to figure out my day. You know, it's kind of weird to wake up on a Wednesday and not have to be at the Sag Harbor Express. So it's good, but it's interesting to try to carve out your time, you know. But I'm doing the same thing Dawn is, meeting with a lot of people and talking about
And you've been writing?
Yeah, I've been writing. You know, I want to, you know, again, like Dawn, I want to wait until like things are up and in there, and you know, there's some new things coming up that I don't think we're quite ready to talk about.
Are you still
about.
Keeping up with what's happening locally?
Kind of.
Though?
I mean, yeah. I will be now that I'm back. I mean, I've been down in South Florida for the last 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
So I'm a little bit out of that loop.
Right, right.
I can tell you what's happening on Lincoln Road in Miami, but I don't know. If you...
And at the Delano.
And at the Delano. That place is pretty
I love that
fabulous.
Pool.
I was there
yeah,
for New Year's nice. Eve one time. Oh,
yeah.
My God. That's
it?
A whole other story. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Listen, we're going to talk Deer Call because coming up, we're going to welcome a panel of editors. We're going to take a break, including Joe Shaw and David Rattray from East Hampton Star and Michael White from the Times Review. Bob DeLuca has pulled them together because we're going to have a big discussion on the Deer Call situation later on this morning on Going Green. Stay tuned for that on this Friday. We're going to announce our Merci Bouquet recipient coming up. Stay with us. It's the Media Mavens on WPPB.
I'm not going to get too sentimental like those other
another stick of Valentine's. 'Cause I don't know if you are loving somebody, I only know it isn't mine.
Support for WPPB comes from the Suffolk County National Bank. SCNB is the bank for business on Long Island and has all the products and services businesses need to succeed. Whether a business is large or small, they can count on the Suffolk Bank for their banking relationship. Learn more at scnb.com or 631-208-2200. The Suffolk County National Bank, serving the community since 1890, and where good relationships are good business. Equal opportunity lender, member FDIC.
Have you been to the Water's Edge? If not, come out this Sunday, March 2nd at 4 p.m. and join us for the next performance of the Water's Edge Radio Hour with sketch comedy and live music written and performed with you Hamptonites in mind at the Bridgehampton Community House across from Candy Kitchen. Hear past and future shows on WPPB 88.3 FM, your local public radio station in Southampton, New York, or on hitfest.org. Water's Edge is brought to you by Dance Papers, Wolfer Estate Vineyards, Plum Builders, Douglas Elliman Realty, and Mike Daly of Sotheby's.
And you're back. We are back. Thank you for being back. WPPB, Peconic Public Broadcasting, and it's the Media Mavens. We got the full crew this morning, Annette Hinkle, Don Watson, Georgie, Catherine Manu, and Brendan O'Reilly. And, of course, we give away our Merci Bouquets every week. We're looking for more nominations, folks, and you can message us on the Eclectic Cafe Facebook page. We're almost to 1,070 likes. Yes! I'm so excited about that, and it's a great new year. And that's the place where you can send us a message, nominate somebody in our community that you would recommend to receive a beautiful plant or bouquet of flowers handpicked and hand-delivered by Annie from Sag Harbor Florist. This was her big idea, and we love it, a way to reach back to the community and thank you. And we've had, oh, my God, so many thank yous coming in from past recipients. Susie Roden just wrote a lovely email. Bob Schallner hand-wrote a note
so
of thanks.
Cute. It was nice.
Yeah,
isn't
that nice?
The moguls.
The media moguls, right?
Boy, I wish we were moguls.
Yeah, right.
Nice.
Yeah.
We're working on it. We're working on it, Annette.
Say
if
it
we
and
moguls,
make it so.
We might not be here. But anyway, we want to give thanks to our community. And if you think of someone who's an unsung hero or someone who could just use a boost, please message us on the Eclectic Cafe page. Send us the name and the contact info and a description of why you've nominated them. And Annie just and I just decided today that we're going to include with the delivery the written description of why they've been nominated.
Oh, that's so
cute. Isn't
that
nice?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so today the nomination came from Don Watson. And so today, Don, do the honors here.
Yeah, I got the write-up thing sprung on me at about, what, 8:30 this morning. So I was sitting in the car before I came in, not only cramming for all the news stuff, but then writing this this piece about Jackie Leader. And, of course, I was sobbing in the car. So I hope I keep it together right now. But Jackie Leader is the artistic director for the East End Special Players. She has done so much in her, 20-plus years in furthering awareness of those with special needs. She wasn't a psychiatrist or anything to begin with, but she saw this niche and she wanted to help all of these people who didn't have a voice to be able to get up and not only have a voice and write about what's facing them and their problems and their dilemmas and their challenges, but then to get up on stage and perform it so everyone can see. It's just what she does is beautiful. And, I'm going to lose it.
Don't lose it.
She's an advocate. She's got a kind heart. She's a caring person. And I applaud everything that she does with so many people, and she's touched the lives of so many people. And on a personal note, I know that it's been a challenging year because she lost her son, Sax, who was a talented, truly creative, beautiful young man. And I've been thinking about her since, and I just thought she's such a perfect recipient for this. She's a wonderful woman with a beautiful heart, and I applaud everything that she does.
Bravo, bravo. And Jackie Leader, the recipient this week of the Merci Bouquet. Thank you, Dawn. And so you'll get your bouquet today, tomorrow, or into the next week. And thank you, Annie, from Sag Harbor Florist, for giving back to the community and allowing the Media Mavens and WPPB to do the same. So we appreciate that. Thanks, Dawn. Beautiful choice. Jackie Leader, we love you. Let's get back to some of the news. And I'm going to shoot this to Brendan right off, and Catherine can weigh in, and all of us. But the news this week was a state Supreme Court judge has dismissed a lawsuit against Southold Town. This is interesting. This was a lawsuit that sought to prevent the plan to use hired federal hunters to, you know, cull the deer within town lines. So what's the reaction to this? What have you written about, Brendan? What was this a surprise?
I don't know that it was a surprise. Other than that, sometimes these things just really drag out. Southold Town seemed pretty confident that they would prevail. But a lot of times it does take a few more court dates before that happens. So this was pretty quick. I hope I put all these words in the right order. It's like the Coalition for Wildlife Preservation of the East End. Maybe Wildlife
it's
Preservation Coalition.
Coalition of Eastern Long Island
of
filed
Eastern
the
Long
suit,
Island.
Right? And they made a request apparently for a temporary restraining order to halt the call.
And let's just be clear that this is the Long Island Farm Bureau sponsored call.
This is the Long Island Farm Bureau sponsored call, because otherwise there's also North Haven has a call that they're looking to do using a private company, not through the Farm Bureau. This particular lawsuit would not actually have stopped the call. It would have done two things. It would have prohibited Southold Town from giving $25,000 toward the call, and it also would have prohibited the town with contracting for the call. By saying that the town erred in classifying it a Type 2 SECRA action. SECRA is the State Environmental Quality Review Act. So they said that the town should have done much more study before coming to the conclusion that this wasn't going to have a certain amount of impact on the environment that would require a more drawn-out study. But if they had successfully stopped the town from giving money, it wouldn't have stopped the Long Island Farm Bureau from doing a call with private landowners in Southampton Town.
So is the call going on in Southold Town?
It has not started yet because there is a lot of prep work that has to happen. They have to canvass areas to figure out where the most deer is, when they come. And also they are trying to secure permission from private landowners. So the more private landowners they get on board, the easier it makes their job.
Is this targeted for farmland specifically?
Well, I think just anywhere where they know that there's a density of deer and where it's not going to be in a highly populated area. You could either do that on one big farm, or you could take multiple properties where all the neighbors say yes, and then that gives you a wide swath to hunt for the deer in.
Yeah, I mean, and let's be clear, Southold Town might be the only municipality right now that is giving money to be a part of this Long Island Farm Bureau call, but they have state funding that they can use for a deer call, and they can work with private landowners, you know, in any municipality.
Allowed to go ahead with this.
They're allowed to go ahead and work with a private landowner.
So, you know what my question was, too, like, wasn't this lawsuit also threatened with East Hampton? And did it actually go to that? And were they ordered
stopped?
Not to? Or did they just back off because of the fear of the lawsuit?
In East Hampton, they were served with a lawsuit, but the lawsuit came at the same time that East Hampton was prepping for their Tuesday meeting to say, we're not doing the call this year, because they had received numerous feedback and... because there were a lot of things delaying it. They said we're going to need to take another year to look at this, and maybe next year.
This is what Anna Thronholst, Southampton Town Supervisor, was telling us yesterday, that she wants more information before Southampton Town signs on for anything. Because she said if they agree to be part of a call, then what? And she wants to look at it all first. But she's planning on doing that and taking action potentially, or announcing what they might do within the next few months. So I think that everybody realizes that this is a public health crisis, and especially with the tick-borne illnesses. Mm-hmm. And she talked yesterday, it was interesting, about a place, forgive me, I think it's an island maybe off the coast of Maine, but someplace in the Northeast where they, you're responding to this?
I'm trying to remember the name of the island, because I'm familiar with what she's
where they got rid
about.
Of all the deer and all of Lyme disease. left.
Gone.
It's gone.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Because a lot of times people say, you know, the mice still carry it. But, you know, mice don't travel that far.
No.
You know what? And you got a bunch of mice in your backyard that have Lyme. Good chance you're never going to actually
And for
find
the
them.
Record, it wasn't she was suggesting that we do that here. She was just saying that it was very interesting. And she's looking at, trying to look at all the studies that are coming through. And it's hard to find, particularly finding the density and measuring how many deer are there.
Well, and
right?
again, you also need that regional cooperation
right.
because, well, an island like Shelter Island and North Haven to a certain extent might be able to deal with their deer herds on their own and be somewhat effective in that. If you're not dealing with it regionally in East Hampton and Southampton, I mean, how much of an impact can you really have? Those herds are going to, you know, yep. cross borders. And
you know what else is really interesting in this discussion is she was a few minutes late yesterday for our conversation because she just passed someone who had hit a deer. The deer flew and almost hit her car coming the other way.
Wow. Mm.
So she was late because of an accident that occurred with an encounter with a deer.
That person must have been driving quite fast.
I don't think they need to be going that fast.
To make a deer fly into another car.
No, there was a guy who, well, also, if you happen to be on the highway, I know that there was a guy in Riverhead who was killed a number of years ago because exactly that, somebody hit a deer going one way and it flew.
That's what happened to us when we were in a back road in Pennsylvania and we saw it happen and we weren't going that fast. And the car, the deer was running across, hit, flew up, and almost landed on our hood. On the hood of our car, we had to go off to the side of the road to miss it.
It happened to me a few years ago on Route 114 from Sag Harbor to East Hampton, and I was going the speed limit, and it didn't. I mean, the deer didn't come and hit my windshield, but I was so sad that it happened.
Of course, I was just devastated,
and it, you know, certainly damaged my car. But that actually wasn't what I was thinking about in that moment. I was calling my husband sobbing about this poor deer, you know, on the side of the road. But, traffic accidents are another part of this that, you know, we have to talk about when we talk about a deer population.
Especially because you do have a summer population that isn't that familiar with the roads. And I mean, I've seen people who obviously don't know the area, and I'll see a deer, like, waiting on the side of the road, and they won't even see it. I mean, there's, if you're not used to it, you don't see it.
It's like the swan that someone just killed the swan in East Hampton, which was... Horrific.
That was by the pond there.
Yeah, right by the pond.
4 foot tall swan.
So deer call, that question remains. And if you're listening live to us now on a Friday, please stay tuned because we have a special Going Green. And they'll be targeting, no pun intended or pun intended, the deer call conversation and more. Water quality, too, because I think Anna was just heading into the governor's office in Manhattan yesterday to present the proposal for the clean water proposal for out here on the East End. So we'll find out from her in the coming days how that went. And you can find out more with Bob DeLuca and Going Green this morning. He's got a whole panel of experts, of editors, actually, from local newspapers. You guys know them all.
Yeah.
Joe Shaw, David Rattray, and Michael White. And so I hope you guys will stay tuned on a Friday morning. In the meantime, though, you know, short stories, we wrap up. What's looking ahead? I suppose you got to say Nancy Atlas. Brendan, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but...
Nancy Atlas Friday night with Arno Hecht at Bay Street Theater for the Fireside Sessions that Dance Papers has been proud to sponsor. This is the very last one of the year, so I'm definitely going to make it out. It will be my third, but there have been a lot of people who have been to every last one because they're all fun, they're all different.
Real quick, we got like 30 seconds. Go ahead, Georgie.
For this weekend, I actually don't have... a terrible amount of planned. A friend of mine from England is actually in Greenport. Unfortunately, his mother passed away recently, so they're getting her belongs together. So we're going to be up in Greenport helping friends this weekend. So
okay. Dawn?
Project Mose annual Empty Bowls event be held at the American Legion in Amagansett on Sunday. Bring your bowl and bring an empty belly. That soup is delicious.
Because it's for a good cause. Yeah. Annette?
I'm actually leaving for Boston as soon as this show is
over.
All the women does is travel.
It's not quite cold enough here. So.
Yeah, right. Oh, and the weather.
That's what we really have to look forward to. 6 to 12 inches.
Which is great. Well, nonetheless, we will persevere, and I will head off to another rehearsal of August Osage County.
Can't wait to see that.
I'm scared. Move over, everyone. Kyle Lynch, thank you, and stay with us at WPPB Southampton.